in all. Listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is VOA's Sunny Young in Washington. Welcome to the May 25th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. It's the Memorial Day holiday here in the USA. The holiday is for honoring and mourning military personnel who died while serving in the United States Armed Forces. Memorial Day is also considered the unofficial start of summer in the United States. The summer season is usually a busy one in the sports world, with many events all over the globe. But because of the coronavirus pandemic, many sports events have been canceled and others postponed. At the start of 2020, the biggest international sporting event on the calendar was the Tokyo Olympics in Japan. The games were originally scheduled for July 24th to August 9th, 2020, but they've now been pushed back 1 year, with the opening ceremony set for July 23rd, 2021 in Tokyo. There are still many question marks about whether the Tokyo Olympics, now less than 14 months away, will be held. International Olympic Committee President Thomas Bach says the Tokyo Games will be canceled if they are not held in 2021. For reaction, Iron Mike Mbonye contacted a former spokesman of the Nigeria Olympic Committee, Tony Nezianya.
There are a whole lot of logistics problems involved in organizing a games of this huge size. And now, as of now, when coronavirus arrived, it disrupted life, it disrupted the economy, it completely disoriented everybody. The world has yet to reopen interactions. There are no flights anywhere. There are no movements. There are no interactions between one part of the world and another. And everything has always been now on the virtual space. So there is no sporting activities that have been restarted. So if you have to restart after this lockdown, it means a lot. We have to do a whole lot of publicity. And who pays for all those costs and all that? As at today, the vaccines for the containment of this contagion has yet to be found. In isolated cases, some of the countries have been making claims. And this has not been unanimously agreed that this is the way to go. So the implications are very potent. The dangers are very, very much there. These are issues that will have to be sorted out before a games, an incredible one at that, that the Japanese want to hold can become a real world event.
If the game is eventually postponed, what will be the financial implications for the host nation, Japan?
It's already going to be a colossal damage to their own economy because they have hinged every preparation towards the games. And you know, it is something that doesn't start in a day. It's quite enormous. So already they have incurred a lot of debts because the suppliers and whatever and companies that are involved in supplying of logistics and otherwise for the games. They are all behind schedule now. So they have programmed themselves that they will do these games at this particular time. And then, of course, everything cost and all that is focused on that. And now that the whole thing has been disrupted, you don't know, you have to pay a whole lot of debts. So those are the very terrible implications for some of those type of things.
For Team Nigeria or for the Nigerian Olympic family, what are the options left for them for any scenario that plays out, the postponement or if the games hold?
No, if you have to, of course, too, there are costs involved. We have tried to rally people around to come and go for qualifiers. Those costs have been wasted because in some of them we have not been able to attend those things. And then having to divert energies and divert all our resources towards containment of this COVID-19 has also terrible implications on our economy. And as of today, like I said, the world is not interacting. There is no transportation between one country and another. Airplanes have yet to get back into the air. So it is a logistical challenge, a nightmare for various countries that are involved in the Olympic movement. You know, so of course we have our own share of the cost. Of course it cannot be more than those of the hosts themselves.
That's Tony Nezianya, a former spokesman of the Nigeria Olympic Committee. And Tony was talking with Iron Mike Mbonye on the telephone from Oka, Nigeria.
Sports greetings. This is Tony Obiorah Nizaya, a former spokesman of the Nigeria Olympic Committee. You are listening to Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America.
This is the Voice of America. Washington, Bamboozip, D.C.
Prince Nesta joins us now with a package of sports news. And Prince says he'll be kicking off with Gabon's 2015 African Footballer of the Year. Sporty greetings, Prince.
Sporty greetings to you too, Sonny. Arsenal's top-scoring striker and captain, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who raced for McLaren in Sunday's virtual Monaco Formula One Grand Prix, is considering setting up his own esports team. The Gabonese is a keen video gamer and has been getting in plenty of practice during the COVID-19 lockdown, with the Premier League out of action. He's also a lover of fast and expensive cars, with a couple of Lamborghinis and an exclusive pearl-wrapped Ferrari in his garage. Real Madrid's Welsh winger Gareth Bale started his own esports team this year, while Arsenal teammate Mesut Ozil launched one in 2018. Real Madrid goalkeeper Thibaut Courtois and Manchester City striker Sergio Aguero are among other soccer players to have taken part in Formula One's virtual series. Canadian footballer of Liberian descent Alphonso Davies continued his excellent run for Bayern Munich on Saturday as he scored his second goal of the Bundesliga season in a 5-2 win against Frankfurt. The 20-year-old fullback also became the first Canadian to record a goal and an assist in a single Bundesliga match since Kevin McKenna for Cologne in January 2010. Leon Goretzka's superb strike, a close-range Thomas Muller finish, an own goal by defender Martin Hinteregger, and Robert Lewandowski's header ensured Bayern Munich took a 4-point lead into Tuesday's top-of-the-table clash meeting with Borussia Dortmund. Usually home to 75,000 vociferous fans, the deserted Allianz Arena made for an odd and eerie backdrop to an otherwise typically vibrant and gripping Bayern home display. Goals by Rafael Guerrero and Moroccan defender Ashraf Hakimi sealed an away win in front of empty stands as Borussia Dortmund warmed up for their looming top-of-the-table clash against Bayern Munich with a 2-0 win at Wolfsburg, while Timo Werner scored a hat-trick as RB Leipzig demolished host Mainz 5-0 to reclaim third place in the Bundesliga. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Meanwhile, Mario Götze will leave Borussia Dortmund at the end of the season, the club has confirmed. The 27-year-old German midfielder has managed only 6 starts for the club this season. Götze is a product of Dortmund's youth academy and made 201 appearances over 2 spells with the Bundesliga club. He's won 5 Bundesliga titles and scored the winner for Germany in the 2014 World Cup final. Sports fans from across the world wished their fans Eid Mubarak over the weekend to mark the conclusion of the holy month of Ramadan. Former Manchester United centre-back Rio Ferdinand tweeted, and I quote, "Morning, wanting to wish everyone a blessed and safe Eid Mubarak. Enjoy." French footballer of Malian descent Moussa Sissoko tweeted, and I quote, "Ramadan to all Muslim people, peace be on you and your families." Arsenal ace Mesut Ozil shared a cartoon of himself praying alongside an Eid message to his social media followers, tweeting, and I quote, "Eid Mubarak to all Muslims around the world. May Allah bless you all with happiness and keep guiding you in these difficult times. Stay safe, stay healthy." Manchester United's French midfielder of Guinean descent Paul Pogba shared his message to fans via the Dubai Sports Council in a video, saying, and I quote, "Assalamu alaikum everyone, all my Dubai friends and all the Muslims in the world. Just want to wish you Eid Mabruk to everyone. Keep training, be fit and be safe." Egypt's playmaker Mo Salah previously showed his dedication with a 2:40 a.m. workout during his strict Ramadan regime, but kept it simple for his millions of supporters. Liverpool forward tweeted a picture of balloons with the captions "Eid Mubarak." Real Madrid striker Karim Benzema shared a video of himself on Twitter and wished his 10.9 million followers, saying in the quote, "Eid Mubarak, everyone. May God bless everyone." For the Sunny Side of Sports, I'm Prince Nesta in Eugene, Oregon.
Sporty greetings. This is Jonathan McKinstry, the head coach of the Uganda men's national team. You're listening to the Sunny Side of Sports on the Voice of America. Thanks.
Thanks, coach. And thanks also to Prince Nesta for that spicy sports package. Amy Bass is the author of One Goal, A Coach, A Team, and The Game That Brought a Divided Town Together. In an interview with VOA's Adam Phillips, Bass said her book is actually about two games.
The game is the game of soccer, the most global of sports, but it's also about a very specific game that took place in the fall of 2015 when the Lewiston Blue Devils went to seek their first state championship title in soccer with a very different kind of roster.
Tell me a bit about Lewiston.
Lewiston, Maine was a largely French-Canadian town, a former factory town, textile industry. The bottom fell out when factories closed and moved out of the Northeast. So it was a town that had seen better days. And in 2001, a couple and then a couple hundred and then a couple thousand Somali refugees found their way to Lewiston, taking advantage of available apartments that had high vacancy rates and good schools and a safe community to begin to continue their lives and raise their families in the United States. And some of these kids found their way to the soccer team. Soccer's a passion. And this story is about this coming together of community and family and team in this quest for this state title and what it means to this community and what it represents. You know, community is not just about statistics. It's also about a feeling of home and a feeling of belonging. And that's a priority here.
Still, you said there were lots and lots of growing pains, at least at first. I mean, it's hard to think of two cultures that are more different than the Somalian culture these people came from and the native New Englanders they found in post-industrial Lewiston, Maine.
No, I mean, on the surface is very much a fish-out-of-water story. You know, people's reaction is, why are there Africans in Maine? It's such a cold state. It's an overwhelmingly white state. In the early days, you had moments like when the former mayor wrote an open letter to the Somali community saying, you know, we support you, but please tell your friends and family to stop coming. We can't have any more. And so that's a painful moment, but it's followed by a coming together, a giant rally that the community puts together to sort of say, no, you know, we are many and we are one.
So there's something a bit more to it than either the two groups polarizing or sort of becoming one homogeneous group without distinctions.
It's really a negotiation amongst different peoples to find a path forward. And there's a lot of culture clash, but Maine has the oldest median age in the United States. And to have folks who are interested in laying roots and raising families and having their families raise families was a shot in the arm that Lewiston needed in terms of attracting business and attracting industry in a city that hadn't seen that for a very long time, in a state that doesn't see that.
Of course, it's not really equivalent, but both the Lewiston community and the Somalis had both experienced trauma and displacement. The Somalis, obviously, because of war and famine, etc. But the Lewiston folks had also been through a lot. I could understand, perhaps, why, at least at first, there might have been some resentment against the refugees.
Lewiston has had decades and decades of white intergenerational poverty, has some of the poorest neighborhoods in Maine, and there is that sort of competitive, what are these new people getting that I'm not getting?
So all this is great background to know about the growth and integration within the Lewiston High School. I know there were lots of racist slurs and things that opposing teams used, but it seems like people got together pretty well within Lewiston itself.
Somalis started coming onto the team in the mid to early 2000s, just a few at a time, and the book sort of details some of those early players coming on and different kinds of accommodations that the athletic department had to think about in terms of, you know, diet and Ramadan and how to integrate players and create relationships amongst players. But slowly, the Somali players began to dominate the varsity roster.
I know that soccer wasn't such a huge deal at all in Lewiston before the Somalis arrived, then began to really shine, correct?
Lewiston, it's a championship hockey town. It's a championship cheerleading town. And slowly, soccer was becoming a marquee sport. They make it to the state championship in 2014. They suffer a devastating loss. And, you know, the day after that loss, the next season begins because they are determined that they're going to be the ones to bring this city its first championship in this sport. And it's really an all hands on deck kind of effort. We have the high school coaches working, but the families and the supporters of the team. We see community organizations, you know, Somali founded community organizations are sponsoring soccer programs and supporting youth. We see a bridging of cultures amongst coaches, you know, the longtime head coach of the high school team hiring Abdi Jabbar Hirsi, the first Somali hired by the Lewiston Athletic Department. He is the son of Abdullahi Abdi, who is sort of the coach of everyone in the city, a mentor of everyone. So it's really about thinking about what these kids in this community bring to the game. And it isn't that soccer replaces hockey in this main city. It's that now it's a hockey and soccer town.
That's Amy Bass, the author of One Goal, A Coach, A Team, and The Game That Brought a Divided Town Together. And she was talking with VOA's Adam Phillips in New York. And we'll hear more from Amy and Adam about her book later this week.
Hi, this is Tatiana McFadden, 17-time Paralympic medalist, 7-time gold medalist, 17-time marathon champion, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on Voice of America.
Hi, this is Lori London. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscast. Every hour, on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.
Sporty greetings. This is Sunday Dare, Minister of Youth and Sports Development, Nigeria. You are listening to the Sunny Side of Sport on the Voice of America.
Sunday Dare tops Samson Omale's latest sports report as we hear now.
The diary says he's working on a new sports industry policy for the country. The minister, who says the sports policy will be the first in the country, said without a solid sports industry policy, attracting the right investment into the sports will be difficult.
The focus areas are clear. Infrastructure, mandatory. Grassroots sports development, mandatory. Welfare of athletes, mandatory. But the most important is policy. We need a policy in the direction of turning our sports into industry. Without policy, we can't have the investment, we can't have the incentives that is necessary and the infrastructure.
In athletics, second vice president of the Senior National Olympic Committee of Kenya, Waitaka Kioni, has admitted that the postponement of the Tokyo 2020 Games has given the country more time to adhere to anti-doping regulations it would have failed to meet had the Games been held as planned. Kioni said that the one-year delay to the Olympics had provided Kenya, which sits in the Athletics Integrity Unit's Category A for nations with the highest doping risk, with a reprieve. The AIU outlines a number of requirements and deadline Category A countries must meet, including on testing, education, and resource management. These include some which relate to the nation's team at the Olympic Games. In South Africa, Kathleen Roskarans became the first South African gymnast to qualify for the Olympics in over a decade, but the COVID-19 pandemic has halted her dream of winning laurels for her country. Kathleen had her heart set on an Olympic debut this year, but sadly, it was not meant to be since the Games were moved to 2021. The gymnast, who made history in 2019 when her bar routine won gold at the World Challenge Cup, is keeping in shape at home while looking forward to the 2021 Games.
2020 Tokyo Olympics was where I wanted to be, you know, and then you qualify for it and you work, you kind of plan your whole life around it, shift everything, you know, I moved my studies a year later and all to, you know, try and benefit me doing well at this Olympics, and then it gets postponed, you know, so it was a big shock to me.
On a sad note, two officials of the Sudan Football Association has reportedly died from COVID-19. The Confederation of African Football, while extending the football governing body's condolences, announced that Kahir El Said Abdul Gaddar, chairman of the Futsal and Beach Soccer Committee, died on the 12th of May, while Faisal Yusuf, vice chairman of the National Teams Committee, passed on 6 days later. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria.
Yes, sporting greetings. This is three-time Olympian and Beijing 2008 Olympic medalist Chika Chukwumerijie. You're listening to the sunny side of sports on the Voice of America. Thank you.
Thank you, Chika. And thanks also to Samson Omale for that report. In Kenya, gym closures during the country's lockdown have forced many athletes to find alternative ways to stay in shape. My VOA colleague Gwen Uten tells us more. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Sunny. One of the biggest challenges for people stuck at home in isolation is finding ways to stay in shape. In Kenya, gyms and other training facilities have been closed for 2 months, and fitness enthusiasts in the country have been left with very few options on how and where to exercise. National Taekwondo champion Vincent Ochieng was getting ready to represent Kenya at the Taekwondo World Cup tournament in China later this year when a countrywide lockdown closed the school in Kisumu where he teaches and trains. Ochieng tells Reuters News he now has no other choice than to train outdoors on the gritty surface of the city's busiest highway flyover.
It's my life. I survive through Taekwondo. I'm a teacher. I teach Taekwondo in schools and in halls. And when the schools were closed, the halls were closed, everything changed. Our life become hard. We can't survive. There is no way you can survive. There is no way you can train your kids. There's nowhere you can train your client. So we'll ask government to come up and support sportsmen and women, because this is what you do.
Ochieng trains alongside his daughter and hundreds of other Kenyan athletes, like national team welterweight boxer Evelyn Akini, who told Reuters the country's lockdown has not kept her from training. Akini says she wants to keep up her exercise program to be ready when boxing competitions resume and to keep up her immunity to fight back any illness from the coronavirus. Over 1,200 positive cases of the disease have been confirmed in Kenya, with over 50 deaths. And with the virus not yet contained, not everyone in Kisumu is happy with the large group of athletes who gather to train, many of whom do not wear face masks. Daniel Otieno, a resident of Kisumu, told Reuters his fears of contracting COVID-19 have grown since the training sessions began.
Give us this color, this disease, they will still spread it more. If an individual, if one of them maybe has been affected, coming to train here with, I don't know, five or ten, it is nonsense. I don't see the meaning of that training in this area. If I know, I've been told that I stay at home, let me stay at home.
But Vincent Ochieng says it's impossible to exercise at home, and if he wants to win more medals, he must continue his training regime.
This year, we are planning. And that's why I'm training here. That's why I'm here today. We are planning to replace our country in October. That's China World Cup, Taekwondo World Cup. But unfortunately, this COVID-19, we don't know it Aisha Lini. We are just praying and hoping it Aisha before that time.
Lockdown restrictions are still in place in Kenya, with some restaurants slowly reopening under strict guidelines. On Saturday, President Uhuru Kenyatta said if Kenyans continue to stay the course, the country will overcome the challenges brought on by the coronavirus pandemic. And that is all from me, Sunny. Back over to you.
Thanks, Gwen. That's my VOA colleague, Gwen Uten. And that wraps up the May 25th edition of the show. Thank you for tuning in. I'm VOA's Sonny Young in Washington, and that's the sunny side of sports.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC. VOA's Our Voices television program is about more than just sitting and talking about women's issues. It's about listening to them and bringing their opinions to the table and making sure that their voices are heard. Because our lived experiences, our stories, and our voices will help shape the next generation.
Check your local TV listings and join the conversation each week with Our Voices on VOA.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.